Wednesday, November 28th of 2012, and welcome to the 67th episode of the Last Bastille podcast. This broadcast is kindly hosted over at radioforall.net. I should also take this opportunity to mention that the opening theme is Ashley Alicize's A Puzzling Predicament, and the outro will be Bose's King's Quest, both of them available pursuant to Creative Commons Attribution, specifically CC BY NCSA 3.0 unported. For more information on Creative Commons, visit them at creativecommons.org. For any other content that may not be of original authorship by yours truly, any such material is used under the sincere intention of fair use. If you wish to understand the nature of the situation we are all suffering under and what can be done about it, feel free to visit the Last Bastille blog, which is located over at The Last Bastille, Bastille is spelled B-A-S-T-I-L-L-E, thelastbastille.wordpress.com. And for this particular episode, we will be focusing on yet another topic under the general study area of study called dissident philosophy. That is the nitty-gritty of why good people oppose the establishment. And although the topic is pacifism, you will be getting not one, but two articles for this go-around. So the first one was originally published on the blog on November 2nd this year, earlier this year, this month in fact, and it is entitled Serious Self-Defense. Self-preservation is a fundamental value held by all creatures. All rights, liberties, or any other notions of freedom are only guarded by the willingness of individuals to use physical force against criminals and tyrants alike. Anyone who prefers instead to engage only in non-compliance by pretending that that alone will somehow protect him from the ravages of the enemy is either deluded, or worse, that he does not value his own life. The non-aggression principle, the NAP, is a moral value which holds that the initiation of coercive force is not only illogical, but also by extension immoral. However, self-defensive violence on behalf of yourself or even another individual is allowed, since it is the physical repudiation of evil. According to the American Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment, or 2A, states, quote, "The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed," end quote. Even Henry Thoreau, in his infamous treatise on the duty of civil disobedience, stated that, quote, "All men recognize the right of revolution, that is, the right to refuse allegiance to and to resist the government," end quote. Whether it be the provisions of 2A, the NAP, or the right of revolution, pacifism is thoroughly repudiated by any legalistic or moral yardstick that takes the preservation of an individual's freedom seriously. Self-defense is recognized and practiced in the natural world. The universe is in constant conflict. Just observe the behavior of single-celled organisms, the fish in the sea, and cosmic bodies smashing into each other. As a Navy SEAL instructor once said, "Look at the rabbit when it is taken by the wolf, or the wolf that gets its foot stuck in a trap. The animal does not feel sorry for itself. It never feels sorry for itself." One must have claws the way that cute little kittens have claws. They play fight to prepare themselves for violence. Tiny cats do not complain to anyone that no one should speak of violence for the simple reason that violence is real to them. They have not been duped by being fed the false opiate of peace. Only abused animals give up. So long as men have free will, there will always be fights, and thus there will always be warfare. What has broken the will of many political dissidents? To fight. Unfortunately, it would seem that the domestication of those who would have been willing to fight for their liberty has taken firm root, thanks to the demoralizing rhetoric of the Patriot rock stars within the carnival of distractions. One unnamed libertarian replied to an inquiry by J.B. Campbell regarding the use of self-defense. Quote,
"First, there is no reason to talk of violence as a solution, as violence can only be justified in real self-defense. My belief is that any and all peaceful dissent should be practiced at all times. Anything other than a non-violent approach will always end in disaster as it always has. In the case of America, there are close to 300 million of us, so it wouldn't take much to turn the tide. I do know for certain that your way will fail miserably, and if it succeeded, we would end up with military rule. At that point, all would be resigned to force and violence, and there would be no winners and no freedom."
Close quote. Of course, J.B. Campbell replied with the following, quote, "The LRC guy above said that violence is never a solution. Really? I found violence to be the only solution in some cases. It's always the solution when violence is used against you first. You must counter immediately with overwhelming violence to keep from getting hurt or killed. You must be ready to get violent at the first sound of a threat. So anyone who says that violence is never a solution is a coward, or a liar, or without any life experience." Close quote. So, how was this unknown libertarian influence to somehow believe that peace, freedom, and prosperity were somehow complementary values? Perhaps it came in part from the rock star utterances of Lou Rockwell. The following clip is taken from The Lou Rockwell Show, episode 315.
Any police state like the U.S. employs a vast number of agents provocateurs. This is true. This is not invented by the U.S. Ancient Rome had them.
I'm
sure ancient Babylon or whatever did too. So if you're ever in any kind of a group, any kind of a libertarian group, this happens even in reading groups, and there's somebody coming in there advocating violence, toss him out.
Yes, exactly.
Because
right.
Even if he's not an agent of the state, he's evil, but you want nothing to do with him.
What strikes me as especially strange about all this is that it directly contradicts the classical liberal tradition of protecting your property by force. Even novels of libertarian revolution illustrate the serious reality that we must all contend with by virtue of the fact that we exist. I also find it quite telling that very few political dissidents are emphasizing that what is needed, more than anything else, is the reinvigoration of the virtue of courage, which it, in and of itself, requires the taking on of risk. And I hope that the anarcho-capitalist entrepreneurs can at least appreciate that. Part of what I think is happening is that the libertarian anti-war stance is being confused as also condoning some sort of anarcho-pacifism, which of course violates the self-ownership axiom that libertarians hold so dear. Considering that the Founding Fathers were the only ones to have actually launched, and won, the only truly libertarian revolution in history, it would stand to reason that at least one of them had something to say about the virtue of self-defense. Samuel Adams told the Boston Committee of Correspondence on June 27th of 1774, quote, "A Grecian philosopher who was lying asleep on the grass was aroused by the bite of some animal upon the palm of his hand. He closed his hand suddenly as he woke and found that he had caught a field mouse. And as he was examining the little animal, who dared to attack him, it unexpectedly bit him a second time and made its escape. Now, fellow citizens, what think you was the reflection upon this trifling circumstance? It was this, that there is no animal, however weak and contemptible, which cannot defend its own liberty, if it will only fight for it." Close quote. Unlike the Texas Penal Code subsection 46.02, which has rendered mala prohibita not only open carry, but also constitutional carry, Texas Penal Code subsection 9.31c states, quote, "The use of force to resist arrest or search is justified, one, if before the actor offers any resistance, the peace officer or person acting at his discretion uses or attempts to use greater force than necessary to make the arrest, and two, when and to the degree the actor reasonably believes that force is immediately necessary to protect himself against the peace officer's or other person's use or attempted use of greater force than necessary," end quote. Now, what is earth-shattering about this statute is that it says that in Texas, police brutality itself is illegal, and also that the citizen being harassed by these blue-costumed thugs reserve the liberty to forcibly resist by whatever means necessary. Gary Hunt comments, quote, "What gives a peace officer the right to take a person's liberty or property? Obviously, the Texas legislators realize that excessive force could be used unlawfully, justifying lawful retaliation. Perhaps they understood human nature and knew that personal bias might play a part when one person, operating under color of law, might exceed lawful exertion of force. Understanding that abuse of power might occur, isn't it possible that both time and extension of power might result in law enforcement officers exerting an authority that is beyond lawful authority?" End quote. Maybe if Antonio Bueller had taken that to heart, he never would have been arrested by the Austin Police Department in the first place. Some of the anarcho-capitalists want to socially engineer their way out of tyranny, such as by not spanking their children. While I can appreciate the out-of-the-box thinking that libertarians are known for, it is this very lack of respect for self-determination that has perpetuated the tyranny we are all suffering under. If victory over the establishment is ever to be achieved, then laissez-faire has got to mean something. If you are a warrior, you will come to terms with this reality. The only way that you can work towards peace is when you sign up with Ray Kurzweil, when you say, yes, plug me into the Borg. I do not want free will anymore. I do not want the free will to kick my neighbor in the teeth just because I feel like it. You may not do that, but he may decide to do it to you. So what are you going to do? Are you going to get a protest sign or write your congressman? If he really wants to, neither is going to stop him. No. The only way that you can prevent someone from hurting you is to be a warrior by preparing for violence. With regard to training yourself how to deal with violence, there are some initial steps that you can do. I would first suggest that you mentally visualize how if an attacker were to strike mano a mano, just as you walk into the next room, what exactly could you grab within reach that could serve as an improvised melee weapon? What could be pressed into service as an impact or penetration weapon? What furniture could be used as cover or concealment? Also, what could be a distraction thrown at your opponent? Hypothetically postulating different scenarios to yourself is invaluable for mentally preparing for combat. Understanding the physiological stresses of combat is integral towards preparing for dealing with it. As it is mentioned over at the Internet Armory about how a bullet deters an assailant, quote, "A bullet may be effective in incapacitating an aggressor by any of five mechanisms: disrupting or impairing the supply of blood carrying oxygen to the brain, disrupting the central nervous system, breaking bones in the skeletal support structure, psychological reasons, and neural shock," end quote. Real-life combat is not at all like those action films littered with predictive programming. The sheer synergistic physical and mental stresses placed upon you in actual combat are going to be among some of the very worst experiences of your life. However, you need to be able to struggle through and cope with it due to the exigencies of your own predicament. Consider also the aftermath of a lethal force encounter with all the emotional and potentially legal consequences that could ruin your life one way or another. If at this point you don't think you have the stomach to kill or at least injure, then you need to more precisely determine under what circumstances you would be able to. Do you simply have more tolerance for criminal and/or tyrannical behavior? Or is it simply that you need more technical training, such as marksmanship drills, reading military strategy, sparring practice, etc.? It is making decisions like this that separate responsible adults from those who suffer from the victim mentality. You cannot have peace so long as you have free will. So prepare for warfare. Study warfare. And I am talking to the men. I am not talking to the candy asses that want to go back to their cotton fields. For those who prefer to remain domesticated, I hope you enjoy working those fields, since by doing so, you admit that you are a slave because you want to be a slave. You are not going to challenge the tyrants who poison and stomp innocent people into the ground. If somebody wants to hurt you, they will hurt you, if they really desire to do so. The only way that you can prevent them from doing that is to have the willingness to hurt them back. My liberty is too precious to me to squander it on the promises of voluntarist daydreamers who want to mystically proselytize their way into the anarcho-capitalist utopia. Part of the essential value of being a libertarian in the here and now is to survive and thrive despite the state, not because of it. And again, that was my article entitled Serious Self-Defense. And now for the second article. This was originally published earlier this month on November 12th, and it is entitled Lou Rockwell, Pacifist? Editor's note, if you haven't yet perused Serious Self-Defense, do so before reading this article. It provides background on the issue of political dissidents using violence in order to secure their liberties. During a broadcast primarily discussing why voting doesn't work, Steve Floyd abruptly postulated the following, to which Lou Rockwell replied. The following clip is taken from The Lou Rockwell Show, episode number 319.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Lou, this is Steve Floyd. I host a show during the week, and I get an awful lot of calls from people who get very angry that we talk about not voting because they feel as if they've been forced into this false choice where either they go out and vote or they take up arms and start killing people. And I'm trying to tell them, look, no, you don't have to kill anybody. In fact, we advise you not to do any violence to anyone anywhere. That's not part of our makeup here. That's not what we're advocating. Who is advocating it? Where is that idea coming from that somehow we have to take up arms in order to make a change?
I think that comes from Obama and Romney, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, aren't they the ones always advocating war to make change? Aren't they the ones who take up arms against anybody who, you know, this is the bunch that claims the right to kill you if you sufficiently resist paying your library fine.
Right. Nice. Yeah.
They're the violent ones, you know. So, yes, they're violent. They're private criminals, but they're nothing like the public criminals. So, absolutely, that's the government's mode of operation, killing people. That's not our mode of operation.
The government's got
most of the guns. They've got the atom bombs and so forth. Our battlefield is ideas. But not voting is a very important idea. Don't get roped into the nonsense that somehow voting, one crook versus another crook, is going to improve your life. Tell me when that's happened.
Where the hell does Rockwell get off insinuating that anyone who understands the nature of reality by preparing for violence is somehow a government agent or provocateur? Now, as an Austrian economist, he and the other scholars over at the Ludwig von Mises Institute have done some good work teaching political dissidents how the free market actually works. However, that does not mean he is either qualified or experienced enough to appreciate the field of politics, that is, the study and practice of coercive power. If he claims to understand history as much as he claims to, he is also knowledgeable enough to know that nothing fundamentally changes without violence. As Emma Goldman once quipped, quote, if voting changed anything, they'd make it illegal, end quote. My own version would be, if verbally bludgeoning everyone ever changed anything, it would be illegal. Now, I've raised the alarm about this kind of behavior before. When I described what controlled opposition was, I warned. It is certainly not a stretch to assume that in the relatively near future, some controlled opposition will blame the actual Patriot guerrillas, who would be engaging enemy forces in active operations on the streets, as false flag patsies, If you don't believe me, just look at the rhetoric being spewed now from the Patriot rock stars about how anyone who even advocates for violence is automatically to be considered by the rank and file as agent provocateurs. I think this proves the willingness of such figureheads to sell out the real good guys to the establishment later on down the road. Now look, I'm not accusing Lou Rockwell of being controlled opposition. What I am pointing out here is that he is attempting to wrap himself with the aura of civil disobedience historical figureheads like MLK Jr. and Gandhi, the latter of whom actually remarked that he would have preferred to have firearms with which to resist the British. Of course, it's not kosher for these so-called activists to mention that the right of revolution is the fallback position of collective self-defense for when the law fails to secure our property, liberties, and lives from partial or universal plunder as orchestrated by the state. While noncompliance has a marginal utility, that method by itself will not secure your liberties from rampant statism. To be fair, Lou Rockwell stated the following a few minutes later from the that same podcast episode, the Lou Rockwell Show, episode 319.
And so I think we always have to be nonviolent. That's our basic principle. We don't want violence. The only time violence is ever justified is in defense. It is never justified in offense. And again, we also say as libertarians, the moral law applies to everyone. Just because somebody's in a government suit or getting a government check, that doesn't make them exempt from the moral law. So the things that are wrong for you and I to do in our private lives are also wrong for the government to do.
Is it me, or is he just confusing the issue? According to this alleged rationale, is it really a stretch to therefore infer that Captain Prudus Wright was an evil, power-hungry statist when she held Captain Leonard Whiting at gunpoint during the battles of Lexington and Concord? Whenever I refer to the bastardization of libertarianism, especially with manipulating the actual meaning of the non-aggression principle, it's little stunts like this within the carnival of distractions that I am referring to. Needless to say, attempting to decipher what Rockwell means by the moral law would have to be an article in and of itself. And again, that was my article entitled Lou Rockwell Pacifist. The only postscript I really want to add to this is that just watch out whenever you hear any of these Patriot rock stars basically get them and say, we have to be nonviolent and just let the establishment just, you know, run roughshod over everybody. Just keep an eye on that. Just document whenever they... actually, this is something any of you guys can do if you're really dedicated or you feel this is important enough. Just document any time any of these guys mention about, oh, we need to be nonviolent and do the Gandhi thing and all this stuff. And you know what? I'm sorry, but J.B. Campbell was right. You know, the Gandhi thing does not work here in America. What works in America is guns. And technically, you know, that's just that. The only other thing I want to add is that little stunt about, only you know, Asian provocateurs, you know, want to use violence or whatever. Besides the fact that even the term advocating for violence, quote-unquote, advocating for violence, is vague. It's actually an establishment term. They came up with it, the mainstream media did, and then the alternative media picked up on it. But they never define it. They never say, oh, you know, the mainstream media term is wrong. No, they never do that. It's just they act as if it's a valid term without ever defining it. That's kind of the first problem, but it implies that self-defense is bad. I mean, because, you know, what's the definition of violence here? And you see, that's the thing. It's very much a semantic thing, but it's also trying to get people away from something that historically has occurred before. And here's my challenge, if you will. Here's a test. If it is true, indeed, that anyone who is serious about defense is an agent provocateur or a government agent, how would you explain the Irish during the early 20th century? Were all those guys agent provocateurs and government agents, especially when the British would line up the captured members of the old IRA and line them up to be shot? Or how about the Maquis, the French Maquis during World War II? Were all of those guys agent provocateurs and government agents? They all used violence. It was self-defense. It was right of revolution. You know, in the one case, the British were constantly trying to enslave the Irish. And in the other case, the National Socialists invaded France, and so the French were trying to repel them. We always have to be nonviolent, right? We always have to let the enemy run roughshod over everybody because, the Gandhi thing will work. Never mind the fact that Gandhi actually wanted guns to shoot British government agents, the redcoats. No, can't actually do that. Can't deal with our own redcoats, the standing army, if you will. No, we gotta play nice with them and beg and plead with them to be nice to us and all this kind of stuff. And please work with us. It's just like, at this point, just encourage as many of those guys to quit their jobs and do something productive in the free market. And otherwise, with everybody else that's left, they made their choice, okay? May I point out the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, too? Oh, but wait a minute. Those Jews were government agents, right? Oh, they're not genuinely, pissed off that they're getting stomped on. And I don't want to get into the issue of Germans versus Jews. What I'm saying is, if you just look in terms of when violence was used by different sides in different conflicts throughout history, just even last century, it did come down to violence. So, one side being, collective self-defense, which is revolution and right of revolution, and then the other being the imperialistic, colonial, aggressive, tyrannical ass wipes. So, which is it? Which is it? Because apparently Lou Rockwell sounds like a pacifist. Let them stomp all over you. So we'll say we want to live without the state, but we're not actually going to challenge their monopoly on violence. That's the problem with statism. It's always about a monopoly on violence. But the only check, the check and balance, if you will, on a monopoly of violence is to decentralize it. And you decentralize a monopoly on violence, you get rid of the monopoly, basically, by making sure that people have access to the tools as well, more importantly, the training and mindset to use violence when necessary, self-defense, if you will. Self-defensive violence specifically. But, when was the last time any of these Patriot rock stars made that fine delineation? I except maybe one or two who are technically, who think of themselves as being part of militia units, which unfortunately do not submit to the authority of the Committee of Safety, which is a discussion for another time. They're really not thinking this, most of them are really not thinking this through. And yes, obviously, a violent revolution type thing is to be is not desirable. That's not the point, though. Just historically, it happens over and over and over again because all the other means of lawful process fail completely. That's what happens when you have the mainline political process as well as other sorts of legal remedies completely break down. I don't know how else to make it clear. Honestly, at this point, I think really any method of lawful process, really, if you want to be realistic, can really only serve to buy us time and keep some of our guys out of jail. That's it. It's strictly playing defense. It's not moving the cause for liberty forward at all. It's just simply trying to not have us, take, three steps back, so to speak. It's just maintaining current position, the paddling up the river, but you do it against the currents enough to where you're maintaining the same position in the river. At this point, that's all really any method of lawful process realistically can do at this point. Unless somebody can come up with some sort of miracle, and not state nullification, not public banking, not constitutional sheriffs, and sure as hell not begging cops and military to refuse to obey unlawful orders. Look, those guys are either going to obey their unlawful orders or not. You have no control over that, and neither do I or anybody or the guy down the street, if we're going to be honest. Only those guys in those positions with those jobs, the soldiers and cops, can do that. The constitutional, the sheriffs are the only guys in position to actually deal with, to push back the federales. And in terms of state nullification and public banking, you know, sorry guys, but the state legislature has to do that. And last time I checked, most of us weren't members of any of our respect, any of the 50, you know, state legislatures. So why is there all this focus within the alternative media on focusing on these supposed solutions or possible answers where the responsibility for actually doing it rests on somebody or something else instead of what you can do? But notice, they'll hardly talk about jury nullification, which does have some limits in terms of its process of actually making it happen, but generally speaking, you, me, and the guy down the street can be called up for jury duty. And if, you know, if you don't wiggle your way out of it and you try to get on the jury, if they bring a case before you where they're trying to railroad that, you know, some defendant and, you know, something that where he didn't violate mulla and say, but even though he did maybe violate mulla prohibita, jury nullification would save his ass and also establish a case precedent. But that's a subject for another time. The point is that any of these methods of lawful process are just really just, I don't know how else to say it. It's buying time. And it's buying time because it's going to come down to violence at some point. If some people have the time issue, well, when is it going to happen? It doesn't matter. It could happen tomorrow. It could happen next week, month, year, decade, maybe even 2 decades if it lasts that long. The point is it's going to come to a head at some point. And I'm not saying it's going to be some mystical, you know, Lexington and Concord-esque thing. It's probably going to be more like a slow ramp up or something to that effect. And so I don't see why anybody is just kind of waiting around for anything to happen. You know, it's happening now. I mean, shit hit the fan day already happened. If you want a benchmark, I would suggest the Waco siege. Or for some of you guys that came in later, maybe 9/11. The point is you can use any of these different, if you need a benchmark to justify in your head that it's you know, about to occur or is slowly occurring, which is what I think is more the situation, then fine, use those benchmarks if you need to convince yourself in your own head. But acting as if it's not going to come to blows is just naive. It's ignoring history. It's definitely ignoring the last century. And if you don't believe me, you should really look up democide, which is death by government. And then come back and tell me I'm wrong. And, oh, yeah, we can do the Gandhi thing. And, you know, that'll save us, even though, you know, governments murdered well over 200 million people last century. But the Gandhi thing will work. Even though more than 200 million people died last century by government. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, wow. I mean, if you want to talk about the height of insanity, I don't know how else to put it. Now, minimizing damage, minimizing, mitigating certain harmful effects, that's one thing. But, and there are certain types of military strategy that can definitely assist with that. But the issue of whether or not to pull the trigger, it's a moot point. I mean, what's... And so there's all this non-violent, who need to be non... It's like, you know, fuck you. You don't understand what's going on. You're a sign-waving coward. You believe that if you go up to a bunch of psychopathic authoritarians, as Ron Paul himself called the U.S. Congress recently, just as a recent example... You go up to these psychopathic authoritarians and just plead, you know, just beg to them, oh, please be nice to, you know, please be nice to me. Please don't steal as much of my money. Please don't enslave me as much. And please don't kill me sooner than you already are with, you know, the soft kill weapons or whatever. You're completely loony. You don't understand human nature. And more importantly, you don't understand the establishment and just how far gone they are. So the takeaway from this is that self-defense is really, really important. And oh, by the way, here's the other thing. Even in the best of situations, let's assume everything was great. Everything was fine. You know, the Republic is restored. The anarchists have their, you know, collectives off in the middle of the Yonder woods or whatever. And everybody for the most part is basically okay. Maybe there's some, you know, small petty crime here and there. But generally speaking, everything's fine. Guess what? Self-defense is important then too. Because you will always have an aberrant batch of humans who will decide to be criminally violent and try and steal your wallet, you know, rape your women, steal your children, you know, kill you, etc. So it's always, you're always, you know, the human species will always need to be well-trained in military science. Always. That's never going to change. I would be very surprised if I was wrong about this, especially considering that history backs me up on this pretty much 110% for the most part. But yeah, I mean, if you're a pacifist, you're denying human nature, you're denying certain basic elements of this reality we all happen to inhabit, and you really don't understand, and then kind of going, now coming back to our situation, you also don't understand who we're dealing with. But again, even in the best of situations, you still need, you know, the military mind as well. And I notice that the establishment themselves, the mainline corporate horror media, always tries to get everyone to be pacifistic as much as possible. So when you see the alternative media doing that, or certain segments of it, like the carnival, you have to ask yourself, why? What is the goal here? What is the purpose? What is the motive? And I think if you kind of take those kind of tidbits I've given you, and then you yourself go and double check my claims on this, and you go double check, and I am saying go double check what these other Patriot rock stars are saying, you should be able to figure out most likely what's actually happening. And that's really all I have to say about that for the moment. Next episode, we will explore dissident philosophy by examining the public carrying of firearms. I'm Sleepy Salsa, and thanks for listening.